At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Rex Heerman back in court today facing a fourth murder charge. You may remember he has been accused of being the Long Island serial killer with charges in the deaths of Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello. Today, Suffolk County District Attorney Ron Tierney called him the prime suspect in the death of the fourth victim, Maureen Brainerd Barnes. We're now going to take you to the press conference that's being held by Rex Heerman's attorney arguing these accusations. Let's take a listen.
I know there's a bail application as well. We also just received that this morning, so I don't have much information on the newest count or counts, but I'm happy to answer questions with you folks if I can.
For clarity,
we entered a not guilty plea this morning. He has maintained his innocence from day one. He entered a not guilty plea on the original indictment, and he again entered a not guilty plea this morning.
What has the reaction been to that?
To the new charges? Well, we had advance notice that it was coming, so I explained that to him. Again, he said, I'm not guilty of these charges. He's looking forward to fight these charges, and we're doing that. We're going to continue to prepare. I expect that additional discovery will be forthcoming on the newest victim, and we're going to examine that and scrutinize
it. Any reaction to the heirs linked to his daughter and his wife?
You know, we saw that this morning, and I know you're going to have a subsequent press conference upstairs. You folks have followed this case from the beginning, and all along we have been told that the evidence is unsuitable for nuclear DNA testing. This morning was the first time, and this is 13 plus years, that miraculously nuclear DNA testing and results have come forward. There has been testimony, there has been lab reports that consistently said it was incapable of having nuclear DNA testing. And we had mitochondrial DNA, and those statistics were quite frankly not very convincing. The initial mitochondrial DNA testing for what they claim was his wife was 28 out of 10,000. There was another hair that was 4 out of 10,000. That doesn't put the wife as a suspect in terms of the actual donor of that DNA, but what it simply says is that she is not excluded. But if you take 28 people, and you'll find out of 10,000 people, 28 will have the same exact type of DNA.
But 8 trillion for the daughter.
This is what we just heard this morning. So we haven't seen anything on the newest indictment, but I am concerned because, again, from day one, and remember, folks, this has been a 13-plus year investigation, and we have been told, and you folks have covered this, that there is no nuclear DNA available. And, in fact, it's unsuitable for DNA testing on the nuclear level. We have been told it's mitochondrial testing, and there have been results. Those results are not very convincing. Today, for the first time, is we hear about nuclear DNA. We're going to look into that. We are certainly going to look into the lab reports, the lab testing, and the transfer of evidence, because that's somewhat disturbing to learn for the first time after 13 years that we now have nuclear DNA testing. Anyway, yes, ma'am.
The grand jury that was investigating the original Is that the same grand jury that's going to be investigating additional victims, or are you going to be starting from scratch?
What I expect is, and you'll have to ask the prosecution about this, I expect it's been the same grand jury all this time. And they may have very well charged out on the three victims and then now presented additional evidence and charged out on the fourth victim.
How is your client?
You still have examples that they obtained. Did they obtain them constitutionally? Did they get a warrant for them?
I don't know. I have, again, this is, we just received this evidence for the first time this morning. I don't know.
Mr. Brown, in layman's terms, can you assess the evidence you've seen from the DA?
Yeah, the evidence is, there's a couple of components to what they have, and it's been consistent up until this point. You have mitochondrial DNA, which, in regards to my client, let's assume for a moment that number one, the DNA on the victim is in fact the perpetrator. That's a big leap, but let's just take that because we have transfer DNA. But make that assumption. Make a second assumption that the collection of the evidence was entirely proper. Big assumption, you have people walking around without gloves at the crime scene. There's photographs. I think some of you folks have published that. But let's just make that assumption. Now you have 2 out of 10,000 could be the donor. Suffolk County, Nassau County, total we have 3 million people. That's about 600 people that potentially could be donors for that DNA. That's one piece of evidence. Another piece of evidence they have is the burner phones. So what they have is they have pinging of cell phones. There is nobody, not one person on the face of this earth, that is going to say that back then my client possessed a cell phone that was a burner phone and was communicating with any of these girls. What you have is pinging. Massapequa Park, New York City. Massapequa Park, the population, if you just limit it to his neighbors, there's 17,000 people in Massapequa Park. In New York City, in Midtown New York City, where he's an architect, where his business was located, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people at any given time that would be using any of those cell sites and pinging. That's the second piece. The third piece is they have an individual who claims that he sees this ogre, and I think you folks heard that at the arraignment, an ogre, and claims he may have seen a vehicle. That individual is somebody who, just to put things in perspective, what he would do is he would use this young lady for her to have the interaction with the John, steal the money, and then go out and get high on crack, heroin. He's the one who purportedly makes this identification. We have not seen, and I don't think they have, made an identification by that individual to my client. This is 13 years later. There has never been an identification procedure, a lineup, a photo array. All you see is this individual claiming it was an ogre, and they now translate that to saying my client. So that's, in essence, what the evidence is. Keep in mind, folks, what they haven't proposed to the court in the bail application is that they have had my client under surveillance for a year and a half. 24/7, they had poll cameras in front of his house. If there was any suspicious activity, if there was anything nefarious by my client, we would have heard about that. For a year and a half, now he doesn't know he's being surveilled, for a year and a half, he is going to work, taking the train, going into the city, working as an architect. He employs 5 people, and coming home, spending time with his family. That's what you see for a year and a half. In addition, when he was arrested, what's also important to note, if there was any type of admission, you would have heard about that. There is none. So when he's arrested, there's an SUV, and there's numerous videos in that SUV that are capturing the conversation with the detective and my client. And I can tell you that my client in that conversation en route to Yaphank was bewildered, was stunned, had no idea why he was being arrested. So those are the things from a layman point of view, what I believe they have.
But sources close to the investigation have publicly said that they believe he was going to strike again, and that's why they arrested him.
So do you know the sources that are close to the investigation that say that? Because I'm just
public,
asking.
It was publicly said.
Yeah, I think the ex-police commissioner had made some innuendos about we needed to move in. There is, and again, I have the videos. We've reviewed the videos. We've seen the poll cameras. There is nothing Rex Uhrman was doing in the year and a half that was suspicious. Rex Uhrman in that year and a half was leaving his house, commuting into New York City like a lot of folks out here in Suffolk and Nassau do, work in the city, comes back home, sits on his porch, plays with his dog, is with his wife and kids. That's what you see in the videos. Those types of things, and I know they say this, those types of things poison our jury pool, because there's nothing about what he was doing that was negative in any fashion. It's the same as putting out that he had a room full of weapons, of guns. The vast majority of these guns are legal. He's a collector of guns. There may be a small percentage, a handful of guns, that are antique or collectible items that were not registered. Let me just finish one thing. There's nothing in this case that suggests that those guns were utilized in the commission of any crime. So again, what's the point of putting it out there other than to poison the jury pool? There is none. I'm sorry.
What about his search history, his efforts to scrub files on his computer? How is your client doing?
Is that a two-part question?
It is.
Okay.
You can look forward.
All right. So in regards to the first question, in terms of scrubbing, or I haven't seen any of that. Searches, so that's another interesting point. Searching the internet. Ask yourselves what you search on your computers and your phones. So one thing leads to another. You see a show about something, you start searching. And they talk about how somebody's killed, you start searching. And then they talk about another way, and you start searching. Think about if they looked at your own personal search history, how all of a sudden you're guilty because of your search history. Think about what you search, what your friends search, what your kids search, what your neighbors search. That in and of itself makes you guilty. Now, the second part of what you're asking me is about how he's doing. You're talking about a gentleman who has never been arrested before. He's a productive member of society. He's going to work every day. He's supporting his family. And he's incarcerated. And he's claiming he didn't do this. So obviously, it's troubling. And he's dealing with it on a day-by-day basis, one day at a time. But he is looking forward to having his day in a courtroom. Yes, sir.
The information that we're all given from the district attorney says that every single one of these four victims' death coincides with your client's wife and kids going away. Was there anything you wanted to say on that?
I don't have any. Let me say this. You know, the guy on the street said to me, Mike, I don't understand, because what about the Shannon Gilbert case, right? And I say common sense. Shannon Gilbert, let's talk about that for a moment. The Suffolk County Police Department has eliminated that as a homicide. So look at, because you're talking about consistency, and I agree with that. So Shannon Gilbert is a prostitute. Shannon Gilbert was a young lady who went to the same location, and it's obvious that she was in danger, that she was going to face death. And she luckily was able to make a phone call, and that's recorded, and you folks have listened to that. Is there any doubt in your mind that Shannon Gilbert was the victim of a homicide? So what? Because it didn't fit into the narrative, Shannon Gilbert was now labeled an accident. She fell. She drowned into a puddle of water. Does that make any sense? So because my client's not involved in Shannon Gilbert, therefore, that's an accident, but everything else is a murder. So these are things that are troubling to us. And again, we're going to explore this at trial. What you folks need to know also, there are over 1,000 leads and suspects in this case. Okay? And I would suggest the typical way to go forward is to gather evidence, see where it takes you, and then you can arrest somebody. In this particular case, they had little bits of evidence. And they focused on Rex Uhrman. And then they accumulated more evidence, and they tried to fit that additional evidence to complete their narrative. That's what we have here, and that's what we're looking forward to trying in a court of law. It's going to snow a foot. You guys better hurry up.
We can tack on to what she said. I believe it was District Attorney Tierney who said in a press conference in July that your client continued to patronize sex workers up until the point they arrested him. If they were watching him from a year, were they watching him do that? What were they doing that whole time?
You'd have to speak to them about it. So I'm not going to comment on whether he did or did not patronize the prostitutes, right? That's sex workers, prostitutes. We don't want to cleanse anything. So the issue is many people patronize prostitutes. That doesn't mean they're killers. I don't know what they have, and I don't know what the commissioner was referring, the former commissioner was referring to, but hopefully he'll be here at trial and we can ask him.
So what about the hairs that were found on the belt for Ms. Barnes?
Those are the most recent.
Right, yeah. Can you speak about that?
I can only because it's new evidence and I haven't seen anything, so I can't. I can comment on what I've reviewed. I haven't seen that yet. That's the I believe that's the DNA that we just learned for the first time this morning that's in the bail package.
Yeah.
And that's what I had indicated earlier is somewhat troubling because all along we've been told there's no nuclear DNA. And now for the first time, 13 years later, what was once unsuitable and we couldn't get a DNA profile from a nuclear basis is now nuclear capable. We're going to have to look into that. It's problematic. I'm sorry?
Can he even get a fair trial on Long Island?
But, you know, let's say we can't get a fair trial on Long Island. Where are we going to go? Right? We may very well make that motion to the court. I have great faith in the people of this county to listen to the evidence and decide if there's enough evidence. I've tried enough cases to know that. This case is obviously unusual, and it's exceptional in the sense that there's so much media coverage. I will say that there's a good likelihood once the team reviews everything that we'll make that motion for a different venue. But you know, then the concern is where are we going to go? Unless you're living in a closet for the last couple, the last 13 years, who doesn't know about this case? And they, with the internet. The advent of the internet, everybody reads everything. But we're going to look into that. You guys good? Grant, I'm sorry.
Did he indicate to you at all what is included in that additional discovery that occurred?
I don't.
We have some additional grand jury minutes and some maybe search warrant returns.
So there's additional. Ms. Koish has it. We're going to start looking at it. There is additional, and the DA is very forthcoming. They've been providing us with evidence as we go along. It's, as most of you know, it's a tremendous amount of evidence. We've been looking at it as we get it. But unfortunately, we're not even close to the end. So it's going to be ongoing.
Mr. Brown,
yes.
Can you tell us how the children are doing? Has he seen them?
I don't believe that either of the two children have visited him at the jail. I know the wife has, but I don't believe the children have yet. But I think that may be forthcoming. So clearly, they want to see their dad.
And has the wife visited him more than that one time that we had spoke about, or just the one?
I don't know. You'd have to ask. I think the sheriff had made some comments about how many times. And I think it was more. My understanding is it was more than one.
Thank you.
All right, guys. All right. Drive safe.
There's more to come in this case. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.